One of the strangest ideas that's come up in Buddhist circles, and even in some branches of the forest tradition, is that goal orientation is a bad thing. We should just be in the present moment, content in the present moment, because wanting things to be different in the present moment or being concerned about the future is a form of desire and craving. Well, of course it's desire and of course it's craving. But as the Buddha pointed out, some forms of desire, some forms of craving are actually good. This is the desire and the basis for success. This is the desire and right effort. Ananda is when he talks about the skillful forms of craving. You hear that other people have gained the end of suffering, and you'd like to gain the end of suffering too. Everything about the Buddha's teachings is very goal-oriented. The Buddha himself was very goal-oriented. Look at his quest for awakening. 6 years putting himself through torture, trying all kinds of different methods. If one method didn't work, he'd try another. Another didn't work, try still another. Almost died. But then he did find the right way. It was because he was goal-oriented that we have his teachings about awakening. Because then he didn't stop with that goal once he had achieved awakening, put an end to suffering. Then he thought of establishing the Dharma, the Vinaya. In some ways, that was even more difficult. The quest for awakening took 6 years. Establishing the Dharma, the Vinaya took 45. He had to deal with all kinds of difficult people. Other sectarians attacking him. Monks and nuns attacking him. People even tried to kill him. Here he had found the way to the end of suffering. And then people said, no, I don't like that. I don't want to hear it. But he kept at it. It's because of his goal orientation that we have the Vinaya now. We have all the Dhamma. Not just in the words of his teachings, but he set examples. They talk about his excellent manners, even down to his manners in eating. Because he never wrote anything down. He left it up to his disciples to make a record of his teachings. First, they memorized things, and they chose what to memorize, how to memorize it. Passed it on. And some of the things they memorized were his attitudes. His values, stories about how he behaved in ways that showed it the right way to behave. So he had to make himself an excellent person for 45 years. You may say, well, it was easy, he had no defilements. But still he had to think strategically. That's when he taught the 1,000 ascetics. He had to teach them in a way that would grab their attention. First he showed off his psychic powers. Won over most of them except for the leader, finally read the leader's mind. Back to the leader. He'd been reading his mind all along. But finally announced, this is what you've been thinking, and it's stupid. Scared the leader. And because they were fire-worshipping ascetics, he used the image of fire. Fire for them was something that was all-pervasive. He says, well, is all-pervasive fire, which is latent, is actually burning everything in your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind. You've been feeding off of fire. You've been worshiping fire for the sake of things that will set you on flame again. So I had to think strategically. And as he said, there were times when he would teach other people, and they'd take what he taught, gain good results. But he couldn't let his mind get overwhelmed with satisfaction. He would feel satisfaction, but not be overwhelmed. Try to stay untroubled, mindful, alert. There would be times when you'd teach and people would not listen. Or they listen but disagree and not benefit from the teaching. But that didn't stop him from teaching. He said he was sensitive to dissatisfaction but didn't let it overcome his mind. Because after all, teaching is a mutual project. We have to think about this as we go through our own practice. In terms of our practice, our own inner practice with our minds, we have to be as dedicated as he was in his search for awakening. we have a goal. We have to learn how to live intelligently and maturely with our goal. It will take time. Anyone who tells you that awakening is already here doesn't know what awakening is. The realization of nirvana. Nirvana are two different things. Nirvana, of course, is unconditioned. It's outside of time and space. But getting to that point where you actually realize it, that takes work, and it will take time. So comfort yourself that it is an excellent goal, and it's worth everything that you do that will get you there. So when there's setbacks, stop and think, what did I do wrong? What has you reflect on your actions, on your intentions, on the actual action as you commit it, and then on the results. Learn how to look in your actions in those ways as experiments. And if an experiment doesn't work, go, how do you change the experiment so that it does work? Keep at it, because this is something that really is important. And if people say you can't attain anything because you're a layperson or because you're a woman or because you're too old or too whatever, they don't know. I mean, look at the Buddha. Who would have thought when they saw him as a prince, enjoying himself with all the sensual pleasures of a prince, that this would be the person who would find the Dharma and establish it for the world? Well, who would have thought, looking at little kids in the northeast of Thailand back in the late 19th century, early 20th century, that these would be the people who would find the Dharma again? Bring it out to the world. So you can't tell a person by their appearance or their situation. There's a lot more going on. And a lot of it has to depend on your determination, your goal orientation, and your ability to stick with a goal and not get discouraged. Commit to the practice as best you can. Reflect on the results, and if the results are not good, go back and change a little bit here, change a little bit there. Give it enough time to show results. Some people are too quick to say, well, I tried this for 5 minutes and it didn't work. Well, give it a little bit more. Allow it a chance to show its results. Then pass judgment. This is purely an internal affair, so it's you versus you, or you versus all the different versions of you are in there. But because everybody inside there wants happiness, you're on the same page. Try to use that fact to deal with the obstreperous parts of your mind. When you're dealing with other people, well, think about the Buddha in his case. His teaching was a mutual effort, and sometimes the other people on the other side were not putting out any effort. He tried his best. Sometimes they wouldn't, sometimes they couldn't. There's a case of King Ajatasattu, who had killed his father. There was no way he was going to gain awakening in his lifetime. The Buddha taught him anyhow, gave him one of the longest discourses in the canon. Because he knew eventually the king would have some faith in him. And that bit of faith would give him something to hold on to well into the future. But he, as he said, if the king hadn't killed his father, he would have gained awakening right there during that Dharma talk. So the people he couldn't help. But as he said, he didn't let his mind get upset. Even the Buddha could control everything. And here we are, people, we want to have everything under our control. We want it to be just the way we want it to be, and get upset when it's not the way we want it to be. Remember, if even the Buddha couldn't control everything in its environment, how can we? So in your efforts to help other people don't succeed, first ask yourself, did you do something wrong? If you can't see anything that you did wrong, then there must be something in either your past karma or the other person's past karma that gets in the way. Well, accept that fact. The world is the way it is. You do your best to help other people. You work on your goodwill, not just thoughts of goodwill, but words and deeds of goodwill for the sake of happiness. And again, think of the Buddha offering the Dharma to people, and they say, no thanks. There will be people who don't want your help. or can't accept your help. But don't let that get you discouraged. Don't let that kill your goodwill. Just learn how to have some equanimity to back it up. As John Fuang would say, goodwill without equanimity is a source of suffering. So have your goals, but learn how to have an intelligent relationship to your goals. Learn to have a good orientation toward your goals, because life is based on finding meaning in our actions. We have to have purpose in life. And having a purpose means having goals. Every moment we put together has a purpose. We want pleasure out of whatever the opportunities are presented by our past karma, as we shape it into our present moment experience. So even in every moment, there's an arrow that points someplace. Our problem is all too often our arrows point in different directions from moment to moment to moment. It's like a compass as you get near the North Magnetic Pole. The needle doesn't know where to go. It spins around. You want to have a clear direction and maintain that direction in all of your choices. And then learn how to live in a mature and strategic way with your goals, so you don't give up. Because that's the lesson of the Buddhist awakening. Don't give up. True happiness is possible. If you don't get it now, well, try again, try again. Keep coming back, coming back. With as much intelligence as you can muster, but as much determination as well.